we look at sports a little bit different in this country. Like, and I know the English Premier League, I was just over there, like, it's huge, but we just, it doesn't stop. It's 365.
Yeah. Yeah.
So these young guys are just, so when you compare it, especially to a substance use lens, the joke I always make is like, because I'm in recovery from both gambling and drugs and alcohol, it's like, I never threw a bottle of vodka in the backyard with my dad. So when we're starting to practice with these individuals, you talk to a, you know, a drug addict or an alcoholic, they didn't start really romanticizing the relationship with drugs and alcohol to maybe like middle school, late middle school, or early high school, where like you have that really early attack.
Yeah.
That if I asked you what's your earliest memory of soccer, you could be like 5 or 6. It's certainly before ever you got introduced to that Red Solo Cup, you know?
Welcome to the Four Peaks Parents Podcast with your host, Thomas Miller. I'm honored to have with me today, Brian Dolan. Brian Dolan is an expert in helping young adults avoid the trappings and, oh my God, slippery slope associated with gambling. We're going to talk all about how to help young people navigate basically gambling, right? And a very important topic that I don't think gets enough press. Brian is an expert in this space, has been in this industry for a decade prior to focusing specifically on helping young adults basically avoid, as well as obviously move out of and move toward recovery vis-a-vis their gambling. He has tons of experience helping young adults in collegiate programs throughout the U.S., right? You were the head of the Fairfield and the Sacred Heart Collegiate Recovery Program that's focused primarily, of course, on substance abuse disorders. Brian has a practice in New York City as well as in Connecticut. So welcome, 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 Brian.
Yeah, super excited to be here. And yeah, looking forward to talking with you today.
Yeah, well, thank you. So for folks listening, I think everyone listening who's a parent knows what gambling is. But I think like so many things on the show, I had a person not too long ago talking about eating disorders, talking about so many different topics. Some topics kind of become in vogue, right? And others kind of fade a little bit to the background. And so for listeners who may or may not be aware of the scope of this issue, if you could just speak to, you know, sort of what are we looking at? What are we talking about here when we're talking about young adults and gambling?
Yeah, I mean, it's a, I would kind of say the best way to describe it for those of your listeners who are familiar more on the substance use side, I would describe it as like almost the oxy phase of the opiate epidemic. Mm-hmm. So basically, I haven't placed a bet in over 9 years. I'm also in long-term recovery from substance use, but and that's kind of how I got into the space. But gambling is completely different in those 9 years that I've stopped. Meaning back in 2018, basically the Supreme Court lifted the federal ban. So it didn't instantly make sports betting legalized, but it allowed every state to decide if they want to. Currently, we're up to 39 out of 50 states have legalized.
I believe when I saw you last in Colorado, I could be crazy, but I believe you said 33. And that was
it was like 36 or 37. Because
that was like a month. That was like a month ago, you know. Yeah. So that's bonkers. Okay.
Yeah. So it's state by state, it's becoming legalized. You know, one of the traps, I mean, not to speak more about the political or the legalization, but I think the reason that it was able to get passed, because in my betting days, it was all done with kind of how we historically have associated gambling in this country, kind of like underground, mob related, right? So you had to, there was a lot of effort that went forward to place a bet, right? You needed to know somebody that knew somebody, right? There was all of that. So I think where legislation kind of got tricked was, oh, if we just make this normalized, we will, similar to marijuana, like we will just get rid of what we call like the underground market, right? But actually it's kind of done the opposite, right? It's only more, because there's, you know, for my college days, let's say, there was a lot of people that would stay away from gambling just simply off the fact that it was illegal. Where now, the fact that it's legal, it's a closer barrier to say, oh, you know, Johnny's a bookie on campus, I'm going to start betting on him instead of FanDuel, DraftKings, or the million other platforms. So gambling is, it's been a huge increase as far as the amount of people that are exposed to it. You obviously, if you watch any sports, it's super incorporated in broadcasts and TV shows.
Oh, the sponsorships, like everything. I mean, I'm a big soccer/football, right? Football's in Premier League.
Yeah.
And I forget which team off the top of my head, but there's a bunch of teams over the years that you'd see Sky Bet or FanDuel or whatever, right, would be on the jersey. So no, it abounds, like you said. The thing that I like that you said is that there's less friction now. And that's always like something I use a lot with clients, parents, of course, is that, hey, if we want to change a behavior or habit, we have to make the new habit attractive. We have to make the old habit not attractive. We have to decrease friction if it's a healthy habit between us and, say, getting to the gym. So we have the gym bag in the car and we just have to stop as opposed to going home to get changed. If we want to change, you know, add friction between us and something, right? We want to obviously make sure that we don't have 85 social media apps or betting apps or alcohol, right, in the cupboard. But what you're saying, which is a real macro situation, right, that happened legislatively that now thrusts young people, is immediately, you know, they have to now be almost individuated, because you're saying historically those external social barriers no longer exist, right? It's now frictionless. And I think it is. I mean, you speak to this more, please, you're the expert, but do you think sports betting is almost attractive and normalized and has lost a little bit of, like you said, that underbelly kind of feel to it? Do you think it's been romanticized a lot?
100%. I mean, I would say that a 10-year-old, I work specifically with males. It's who this is really attacking, not saying that this doesn't impact other genders. And, you know, but it's a 10-year-old right now who's a sports fan, I think, is being educated that gambling is part of that fandom, part of that experience, part of the whole picture. Where, once again, like I had to like go and find it. I had to realize that betting was a thing. And now I think that is completely, and you see more and more, like there's a big platform called Kalshi that's all future markets. So they call it more like future trading. They just partnered with CNN where you can literally bet on basically the equivalent of the weather. And the CNN's like laying out the odds of the weather, you know? So there's been almost like this glorification of gambling.
Well, thank you. I mean, for all that information, and I know you've been in the space for such a long time, and you know, we've talked offline that, similar to what you just described, it has shifted rather dramatically, right? And you know, speak to me about what you see on, whether it's a college campus or, you know, or in a high school, like what are some things that are the beginnings when we think about, right, addiction. Addiction often starts in a solo cup, right? A red solo cup, more often than not, right? Yeah. It can certainly start with cigarettes and cannabis and a million other things. But for a lot of people, right, it's a red solo cup. So where does this start? And what are some, you know, things that families can be mindful of to spot when it begins to crop up?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think, I think sports in this country, like, I know you're a college athlete, I was a college athlete. Mm-hmm. Like we love sports. Sports teaches us so much, how to fail, how to be a part of something that's bigger than us, how to be a part of a team, how to deal with failure, how to deal with, you know, integration of new people and synergy. And there's so many things that sports give us. And it's not here that I'm like anti-sports. I you know, I love sports, you know, but I think that over identity. So when you speak about like specifically a college student, I worked for years, like you said at the top, at the university level, there's a lot of people that can't play college sports, right? So their identity was based in athletics as a high school person. And then the college level, the pro level, they can't keep going. So, you know, you're sitting around. So, and I think there's a social equity is what I would call it, that comes with being an athlete, right? Like we glorify it. You see parents, I remember when we got to meet on Colorado, you telling me like these parents that are living vicariously through their children's athletics, and like they feel that pressure and they want to perform. So then maybe they lose that identity. And kind of college is like, what are the messages we get about college? Best 4 years of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Have fun. Mm-hmm. But also, like, I started to learn, and a lot of my clients started to learn, there's also a similar social equity with just the knowledge of sports, but money, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Like money, like having mm-hmm. money, right? Mm-hmm. I can buy the girl the drinks at the bar, mm-hmm. or I can go out to mm-hmm. dinner or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I think from a parent's perspective, I think really, you know, I'm a big believer in kind of like the well-roundedness, like what mm-hmm. are other identities, even if, like, I know some of your sons are big time soccer players, mm-hmm. like their father. And, but like, what else about them, you know, what other interests do they have, and make sure we're giving that time to develop those things, and understanding that, like, your athletic career might end, you know, like it, mm-hmm. everyone's athletic career ends, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm seeing is a lot of individuals in the amount of consumption. So like back to the legalization is a lot of the companies and the industries that were pushing for legalization would look over at Europe and say, because you've been seeing this in the English Premier League forever, mm-hmm. right? Is like, that's a mature market, right? It's mm-hmm. been legalized over there forever. I kind of think, just my opinion, we look at sports a little bit different in this country. Like, and I know the English Premier League, I was just over mm-hmm. there, like mm-hmm. it's huge, but we just, it doesn't stop. It's 365.
Right.
And so
right.
these young guys are just, so when you compare it, especially to a substance use lens, the joke I always make is like, because I'm in recovery from both gambling and mm-hmm. drugs and alcohol,
mm-hmm.
it's like, I never threw a bottle of vodka in the backyard with my dad. So when we're starting to practice with these individuals, you talk to a, you know, a drug addict or an alcoholic, they didn't start really romanticizing the relationship with drugs and alcohol to maybe like middle school, late middle school, mm-hmm. early high school, mm-hmm. where mm-hmm. like you have that really early attack.
Yeah.
That if I asked you, what's your earliest memory of soccer? You can be like 5 or 6. It's certainly before ever mm-hmm. you got introduced to that red mm-hmm. solo cup, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's way more.
That's a really good part. Really good point that there's these, you know, archaic family of origin, right? Memories that, you know, like with anything, you know, with that's addiction related, we tend to struggle, right, to play the tape forward and see the whole full gamut, right, of that use or of that experience. But when you go back, you're saying there's a utopian or Pollyanna lens to which a lot of people associate sports. And then by proxy, it's a connection with their peers. It's a connection, like you said, with the sense of instant gratification and money and so on and so forth. You know, what, when, you know, you gave really good advice too about parents kind of looking, I call it the pie chart, right? Like, you know, is this young adult a one-trick pony? Are they over-identified mm-hmm. with their weight? Are they over-identified with their GPA and they have to have a 4.8, right, weighted mm-hmm. to get into whatever school, right? That could be a rather unhealthy individual who's incredibly obsessive and losing sleep. That could be a more balanced individual. It depends, right? Someone could be a valedictorian of a school and be incredibly balanced. Someone could be an elite athlete and be incredibly balanced. But what you're saying, which is really great advice for parents, is to kind of think about, is my child ostensibly over-identified with whatever, right? And we've all seen the kid that is over-identified with weed, who has the 420 shirt on and has weed necklace on and the weed hat on. And the, you know, I had this client way back when who came in like that, and I was like, do you smoke weed? And he's like, bro, you're amazing. It's just like, yeah, I'm good, man. I'm really that good. But you can see that, right? Because there's this sense of like tribalness. And then I like with anything, right? Any addiction, like you said, there's inner lingo, right? So that universality of the sports lingo, I'm sure, bolsters someone's self-esteem to a degree. But then there's the gambling lingo, you know, parlay and this and that and all these kinds of stuff, right? So you know, where do you see this, the kind of transition from, and maybe you don't, you know, from quote unquote, whatever term you would use, safe, flirting with, let's say, poker with grandma, you know, to now we're dealing with abuse and or dependency vis-a-vis gambling. What are those markers so families can, because again, it's not like we're smelling, you know, we're not smelling betting, if you will, coming out of the room or the bloodshot eyes or, but we are probably seeing mood changes and sleep dysregulation and a whole bunch of other emotional dysregulation as well, right? But talk a little bit more about, you know, when does it get concerning?
Yeah, 100%. So I think, you know, I get asked this question a lot. I'm very open about what I do in my recovery. And, you know, play pickup basketball with some guys. And they're like, well, my son plays fantasy. You know, should I tell him not to? And I'm like, I'm not here to like, yeah, obviously there are many people out there that have healthy relationships with these behaviors. I think that what I kind of joke around with that father is like, the individual that wins that fantasy football league three times in a row, I'm worried about him, right? Mm-hmm. So like, if you see as a parent, like, hey, mom, look at this, almost like you would, I scored a hat trick I got an A on the card. Just the constant consumption of like sports media. And that's the other thing, like once again, compared to Europe, like you can have that constantly 24/7. Somebody's talking about the game, somebody's talking about but yeah, there's not the physical symptoms. So I think you know, I think actually entering this dialogue and being proactive. But what I start to see is like the major slips, and I think this is like, I think we're getting there with the awareness around this issue, is you know, I will often get a call from a family, it's like, we've already buried, you know, you needed 5,000, you needed 10,000. We were starting to read online or go to some meetings and parent support stuff, some Gammonon, that we shouldn't have done that, but like we did it. And I think, you know, there was a shame in it for the family initially, right? And they don't want to own that. And so I think like really, I think two things where you can be, like obviously the freshman that keeps asking for more and more money for, you know, textbooks. but I think it can start earlier than that, ideally, with like, I remember us talking too, where you're like teaching your son how to budget and understand money better. Cause I think there's a lot of the families I work with and individuals I work with come from, you know, the family gets validation from providing, right? And then over time, you lose a couple $100, you realize it's not that big of a deal, you know, and there's this presenting gambling thing, and then you just keep going and going. And, you know, kids are smart. Kids understand where they sit in that, like I said, that social equity ladder of money and finances. And so, yeah, I think, and then how much does your, so, you talk about the beginning of it, of maybe an over-identification about being an athlete, and then you lose that identity. And then an over-identification of a lot of my clients, it's like they get their whole self-esteem, right? If they can stop gambling. They, for a long time, we're turning over our self-esteem to the NFL or the NBA or some random game or some, you know, a blackjack table or a poker table. They then are still very wired to the self-esteem of what's in their bank account. I think as parents, you have to ask yourself, like, how much have I kind of lived that way or taught those things? You know, kind of, yeah, we have more than them, or this, we want to live in a bigger house, or, you know, you cost me so much money going to college. And like, how are you communicating about
home?
But yeah, I think big warning signs, like, constant sports watching. I mean, research says like ex-athletes are like 4 or 5 times more likely, and then also 4 or 5 times more likely, like what we call like early success, like the early big win, the early winning March Madness pool, winning the fantasy leagues. That's almost like exactly where these sports books want you to be, you know.
Yeah, it's, there's so much good advice there. I the thing that I just want to cue in on that you said, which I think is super smart, is this idea of, you know, the family in the beginning is supplying and supplicating this addiction, maybe unwittingly, maybe they have in the back of their head, like, this doesn't feel great, right? And one of the things I do a lot with families is helping them to understand, you know, is this known to them or is this known to their loved one? And sometimes the loved one knows they're deep, deep, deep in an addiction and the family doesn't. Sometimes the family, right, has a little bit of it smells like a duck, you know, walks like a duck, talks like a duck. Maybe it's a duck. And they suppress that. They deny that. And just recently I was working with a family where, you know, I was completely understanding why they were not about gambling per se, but why they were kept throwing pillows sort of to brace the fall, because they're trying to just, right, get this person to, if they could just, you know, stay in the job for 3 months, it might stick. If they could just, right, if they could only, right, get the break. And, you know, what, when you put yourself in that family's shoes, is because of course they love that young person. Of course, fear is driving that story because maybe their loved one has had a litany of losses or trauma or setbacks or bang-ups or hang-ups or whatever. But when they are able to step back, whether it is gambling, an eating disorder, substances, just over scaffolding, whatever, it isn't rational, right? And they are walking alongside and accompanying their loved one into sort of that toilet bowl of that progressive disease, right? And then you have, as you know, I've talked a lot on this show about the parallel process of any disease spiral, right? So the family is getting isolated, the family is, right, feeling shame, the family is experiencing natural physical, emotional, social, financial consequences along with their loved ones. So there's this merged identity that's beginning to happen without them realizing it. And now they're just living to sort of die another day and just have a micro, it's not even a micro gain, it's really just a micro stabilization, right?
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about what are the resources available. Of course, you're an amazing guy and an amazing coach, and you work, correct me if I'm wrong, primarily, right, with the young adult, but you're also, of course, addressing systems issues, right, and trying to help the family, right, figure out how they could be supportive and what that looks like. Where do you even begin? I mean, from a motivational coaching standpoint, to just even spark the dialogue or broach the conversation, you know, with someone who might not be ready, of course, to go to a program or go to GA, or please correct me, you know, the correct, you know, resource for them, right?
Yeah. I mean, early on in a new individual, I'm really just trying to create like a connection, really just create like similar interests. So I might even lean in on that, like sports love, or, oh, you were a high school basketball player, but now you're gambling all the time. Like, let's go. That's why I kind of operate more from a coaching lens than a counseling lens. Like, let's go play basketball. Oh, I haven't played basketball in a long time. Because I will say a decent amount of my cases are an individual's first experience in therapy, treatment. You know, so I hold that very sacred, you know. Like, I really am just trying to get, like, I'm here for you. I'm a connection. I'm someone that you can trust. I hold no judgment. That's really early on what I'm trying to do. And then I'm trying to, you know, especially when it comes to sports bettors, which is like what we're seeing more and more of, you know, there's, I'm trying to, you know, GA, and I'm a member of Gamblers Anonymous, but like, it's like very like steadfast, like don't watch sports for a year, which is like a lot for
that. Like, is that the
a strong suggestion?
That's a strong suggestion, but that's like 90 and 90 in a way, right? Or that's like right. And however, not everyone's ready for that, as you know. Right. And I think it sounds like, and please finish, but it sounds like you're a good, not that you're against, let's say, that concept, right? But you and I are doing this every day, and it's not that we're settling for smaller gains, but relationally, you know, putting that time and energy into building that connection, whether it is, like you said, shooting hoops. It's funny, there is a basketball hoop very close to my office in Newburyport that I've basically claimed my office. It's like an extension of my office because I walk there and talk. And then there's a Starbucks that's like all my females, we like basically walk and get some ridiculous, stupidly expensive thing, and then we walk and talk. It's kind of funny. And of course there's tons of girls that shoot hoops as well and do other things. But I love that you're trying to build safety there and a connection. And how do you meet that person who may not be ready for GA and they are still going to be, right, potentially doing some harm? Mm-hmm. You know, how do you take a harm reduction and a stages of change approach with them?
Yeah, I think I love when I get to work alongside, like, there are a lot of cases I get to work on where I'm just on the identified patient in the system. So mm-hmm. like the gambler, and then someone mm-hmm. like you is working with mm-hmm. the family. Mm-hmm. And in those cases, it's like, we do a lot of things where we might like mitigate. There's great tools like self-exclusion where you can go on to these websites. The problem mm-hmm. is there's no national self-exclusion. So you mm-hmm. can't like, you mm-hmm. could self-exclude on FanDuel mm-hmm. and then on DraftKings, mm-hmm. you could, you know, mm-hmm. but so we might get clients down to like a really fixed budget of like $20 mm-hmm. a day and just trying mm-hmm. to like, mm-hmm. they might gamble, they might not, like, but like, let's mitigate some risk and mm-hmm. like talk about what are your goals, right? Like you keep mm-hmm. telling you want a job, you want to get back mm-hmm. to college, mm-hmm. you want to, mm-hmm. you know, and every day you're gambling. And I think the other misconception about gambling overall is like, well, it's just, you know, 7 o'clock at night when the mm-hmm. NFL's on, it's like 24/7 because you're mm-hmm. like romanticizing it, you're mm-hmm. thinking about it, you're figuring out how to get money to mm-hmm. do it again. But yeah, definitely.
Well, you're describing an addiction. I mean, that obsessionality that you just described is, as you know, a marquee feature in any addiction, mm-hmm. whether that's porn, gambling, yeah. food, substances, shopping, what have you, that obsessionality. And then the idea of, you know, chasing that original high, right? Because that person's not feeling good, right? The person who drank too much and might have blacked out is waking up feeling horrible. And then on top of it, most likely they have anxiety, right? Because yeah. whether they have an actual diagnosed generalized anxiety disorder or social phobia, anyone who's waking up the next day feeling horrible is going to have anxiety, right? And mm-hmm. the same is true with gambling, right? I mean, people are waking up with physiological, right, withdrawal, very different than obviously heroin or mm. opiates in terms of what that feels like. But even with cannabis, I'm always educating families, or less families, more young adults. They're like, it's not addictive. And I'm like, you know, what do you look like if you just stopped today? Mm. You know, oh my God, I'd be so anxious. I'd be irritable. I'd be this, mm-hmm. I'd be that. So the same vicious cycle is ensuing, right? There. And mm-hmm. the fact that you said you're able to, you know, begin to spark some sense of internal limits and then also pull them back, right? So they're reducing harm, but with the $20 bet versus the $2,000 or $400 one. And now you're also trying to get them to put on a wider lens and figure out really who are they and how do yeah. you pull, you know, you begin to kind of massage them out of this crux, this over identification. Mm-hmm. What do you
yeah.
see? Yeah, please go. And
you know, years ago, I probably specifically working with gamblers for about 5 years, it was a lot of, you know, Wall Street types like making a lot of money and just mm-hmm. like kind of getting obsessed with that, that quick transaction, right? There's mm-hmm. nothing more transactional than a bet, mm-hmm. right? Like you're, mm-hmm. you win or you lost, right? You, mm-hmm. you the blackjack hit or it didn't. And, so kind of that obsession in the last couple of years, I've seen it like really hijack like the young adults so much more, where like what you were just saying about like that person that stopped smoking weed, it's I'm anxious, I'm avoidant, I have some social stuff, I have, mm-hmm. you know, like my real mm-hmm. problem, right? Weed being the solution. Mm-hmm. Same thing with gambling, but like I am unsure about my ability to function and create a mm-hmm. life, right? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I get a lot of like graduated college, but really doesn't have a plan, right? Or right. dropped right. out of college and now feels like a failure, or worked for a couple years, but got laid off and then found this. And it's like underneath is exactly what you're saying is like, I am unsure about myself, and gambling creates this. It's like, oh, I love sports and mm-hmm. this is something. And that's once again, the difference, right? You talk to an alcoholic, it's not like this bottle of vodka is going to change my life, right? Yeah. Like you might be like, this is going to limit my, you know, my shakes,
whatever. Yeah, of course.
But it's not like, that's the difference between the gambler is like, every day is the most important day of their life in active addiction, right? Today is the day that the ball is just going to bounce the right way.
Right, right.
And so it's like, it's,
so they're romanticizing the original high in a way and living vicariously mm-hmm. through that dopamine hit. And what, why that's so attractive is that it is glossing over, right, the vacancy of their own competency.
Yes.
You know, if you, so what I hear, which is really important for parents, which we talk all the time about, you know, how to, what could we do, right? If, the last, like, I think 8 episodes have pretty much been mostly about helping families to set their kiddos up for success so we're not in a failing to live or failing to thrive or failing to leave parents or failing to launch, whatever word we want to use, phenomenon. But what, when we hear this, or at least when I hear this, I think, wow, this young adult, I have a lot of empathy. They're really graduating with really low self-worth and self-esteem. Mm-hmm. They're having a shit ton of imposter syndrome and probably a lot of FOMO. And if I can just, yes, up the bank account, and you talked earlier, which I loved, about kind of our financial death sentences, I call them, meaning the messages we communicate about money to our children. Mm-hmm. Now that's really tethered for them that they are a piece of crap, right? Because mm-hmm. they have nothing in the bank. And then to boot, they don't have a master's degree or maybe a hard skill, or maybe they do have a hard skill and a master's degree, but they just don't know where to start, whether on the executive functioning side, the shame, self-esteem side. Mm-hmm. And wow, what an attractive, and I'm saying this somewhat sarcastically, but I get it, right? I mean, talk about the old adage of while I'm in the meeting, right, my disease is doing push-ups in the parking mm-hmm. lot. This is a pretty attractive disease, let's yes. be real. Yes. And I think it's highly unattractive, right? Because we all know where it goes and where it ends. But I think for a hot minute, someone could probably fake it till they make it way better than you could, right? With heroin, opiates, and even alcohol, right? And even cannabis, right?
You know, we talked about like the accessibility, and I love like the word like frictionless, like, as mm-hmm. you know, everyone talks about the accessibility and it's like, it's legal now. And that's the problem. There's so many more elements to just that. It's also, for example, like in my not, you know, so proud, you know, but it is what it is, like, you know, my active addiction days, right? Like borrowing money from the wrong type of people, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Now, like you have, like, if you do have a job, right, these like cash advance companies, they'll pay your paycheck a week before interest, like the ability to go get a personal installment loan online. It's like, I have like the same companies I see were breaking down like the financial structure. And it's like these companies that will just give anybody money at these insane rates. So like, it's not just the accessibility, right? It's like the new age of like mm-hmm. these traps. And it starts really early on. You know, there's a whole other side of like, you know, these games on your phone, right, that mm-hmm. are like you playing a Candy Crush, and then mm-hmm. at some point Candy Crush says, you can either give me $5 a day and I'll stop running these ads and you can just keep playing Candy Crush, or, you know, like that. In a way, it's kind of like
100%,
like,
yeah,
putting the money in and keep getting to play, right? And it's,
there is a Wally, and there is a Wally quality here, you know, which if any parent out there listening has not seen Wally, please do. It is like a social documentary about where we are today. And it was so ahead of its time. I get that. And then the idea of the mind-numbing quality and the addictive quality and the isolation that exists, right, in any disease. But when your phone is, you know, one of the biggest things right now that every parent is fighting, right, is, and they're struggling themselves, I'm sure, as we all are, with modeling and regulating our relationship with our phones. And then to boot, we have, you know, our kids, right, with Snapchat and this and that and everything. And like you said, all these games and V-Bucks and Roblox and this mm-hmm. and that. And it, yes, I mean, there's a lot of programming around incentives and mm-hmm. not necessarily understanding. Even Starbucks, a perfect example. I was working with someone recently, and she is not an impulsive shopper. She doesn't have any shopping. She just literally straight up had no clue. And I was doing a budget with her, like showing her how much a freaking $7.50, like a Frappuccino or whatever the hell costs, you know, and it's insane. Like, it's just insane. So, and I think what's also challenging too, and you could speak to this further, but it doesn't feel real. I think, for a lot of people, because you're not seeing your bank account go up or down instantly, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas at a casino, not to say I'm advocating for, go to casinos, people, that's the message from this pod, but correct me if I'm wrong, back in the old days, it was cash, right? Yeah. And while, of course, any addict will still find a way to get more cash, and you've shared some examples there of over-leveraging, you know, loans and putting yourself in debt, but do you think that also further expedites the progressive nature of this disease too? Is that you're not seeing
100%.
Yeah.
100%. And I think that is, that's unfortunately, I think, gambling or not, right? Like not feeling that, like you know, growing up in this age, like you don't, you might not ever touch cash, right? You might never, if you're 15 years old, you might have never really, maybe $5 here or there. But yeah, I think it's a huge part of it. And it really becomes just a number. And it's kind of similar to like, it's kind of like a financial term, like the high watermark. So for example, let's say Johnny is gambling and he goes up to—
Why is it always Johnny, Brian?
Yeah, no, I know.
What do you have against Johnny? Poor Johnny. All the Johnnies out there, we issue a public service announcement.
$10,000, right? He gets it up to $10,000. Now, 3 days ago, his outlook on life might have been $10,000 would absolutely change 90% of my problems, if not all of them.
Sure.
Then you lose a bet for $2,000, right? And you're at plus $8,000. And it's like, oh, well, I'm nothing. I'm zero, like, because I've been to 10. I've tasted 10. So that's like where, similar to like financial, like high watermark, you have a portfolio. Totally. And it's like, I've touched here. So now I'm here and I just got to over leverage and, you know, and that just becomes obsessive. And like, once again, I think like this is, you know, you're always going to, and this is the other thing in the comparison of substance use, right? Like, that's why I think, I actually think, I got to take a eating disorder class in my master's program. And I remember just being like, this is actually a little bit more, because I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict, and I don't need to have a relationship with those things, period. Right. Like my wife can have some wine, but I'm just like, I don't need to like, whatever. You're going to have a relationship with money, just like you're going to have a relationship with food, you know? So like that is different. And I think once again, similar to that, like early childhood connection, or all my, some of my best memories are that little league team, that travel team I played on. And like, you know, similarly, like those early messages about money, once again, like how much can you detach from that? And it's like, I mean, in America specifically, like very hard to detach from that, you know? So, you know, makes things really hard. So we're trying to limit access to money, you know, is like one of the first things I'm trying to be like, okay, like I get it. You still might be contemplative, but like, let's just like lower this. And then, I mean, I've had cases where just like keeping up with the debt and like payments to 12 different people, and that just becomes a whole life in itself. And then managing. So you're trying to limit money, access to money, you know, trying to recreate, like trying to ideally separate fully from the world of sports as far as the consumption side. But then I'm trying to tap into, you know, let's go back to that like early childhood relationship with it, you know? And
you're doing such deep work, dude. You are like attacking it from so many sides. You're helping this person obviously delay gratification between them and this abusive pattern. You're also trying to help them, right, build this new identity, right? That's actually way more holistic and less, you know, one trick pony. You're certainly helping them to stop hurting themselves. So there's a harm reduction quality. There's a motivational coaching quality around, again, who am I and what is my purpose? What is my why? We know young adults, particularly men, right, are really struggling right now with this sense of identity. That's why we're seeing so much of the failing to launch for females as well, too, of course. There's tons of young men, though, who are lacking purpose, identity, focus. And also, we don't know as young men yet, even older men, how to even build friendships. We don't know how to even build sort of a tribe. I was talking to someone the other day and I was saying that, you know, when was the last time you sat down and even just spent 20 minutes jotting down your values as a dad or your ideals as a dad or your mission as a dad? Whereas he has spent, I mean, every day he spends 20 minutes on his career, which is not inherently bad. Because that's what we do. We develop KPIs, we develop SMART goals. We're always thinking about the horizon line, right, for our careers and thinking about the next thing. But we don't do that as parents. Women do a better job than men because they're going to journal maybe. They might, you know, do a better job with podcasts. Men are coming, they're coming along. They've come a long way. So I want to give props to shout out to men and women, of course. And I love all the parents who are brave enough to work with me and be a part of this program, because we have to take a look at, you know, vis-a-vis this issue or any issue, right? What have we been modeling? What have we been unconsciously or consciously communicating? What have we been normalizing or romanticizing? And what is our role? And again, so many of the parents I work with, like you mentioned, the 12 people that, you know, 12 different loans or even getting money from shady people, that's scary. And for a lot of my families that when I do discovery calls, they're like, you know, yeah, if I do this or that, they could die. And that's sometimes true. That, you know, in the issue, right, if dealing with drug addiction, that's unfortunately a scary reality that families have to consider. Same thing if you owe, you know, Jimmy Knuckles, whatever money, right? So these are real things. That being said, right, we have to look at on the front end, which is why I hear so much good like prevention talk in what you do too, not just about the bigger, you know, the bigger, let's say consequence, but even just in the moment, but also even just early intervention is the big message I'm taking from this, that we can really help stretch our kids' emotional bandwidth, their sort of identity bandwidths, and we can make sure that, again, they're not marooned on an island, they're not over-identifying with sports or with money or with, you know, this instant gratification. So there's a lot there. And I think helping families take a deep breath and slow the fudge down and also not let fear write their story probably is a really good way to get them from overjoining in this process. And before they know it, they've loaned out, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars, which has only made their young adult not have to feel the pain of their addiction.
Yeah. And it is like, it's kind of the silent killer, the silent addiction. Those are the terms you hear a lot around the gambling, but like, you know, we don't consider like, and I obviously don't, and I don't think anyone really does, but like overdose to suicide, right? It's just like, it's an overdose. And like, so if you don't look at it that way, which basically everyone does, and I agree with, compulsive gamblers have the highest rate of suicide out of any major addiction.
Wow.
So like, it's a big, you know, it's a very,
well, that pressure just must be oof.
Yeah. And cause you're talking about like, I mean, I can kind of like, I qualify in both sides, but like the gambling is, you're talking about a lot of destruction, not only for yourself and others. And like, so you think about like early sobriety, right? Just from like a, let's say alcohol, it's like 30, 60, 90 days. Like you're feeling better. You're back in the gym. But when you're staring, let's say $100,000 worth of debt and you're making $20 an hour, right? Mm-hmm. Like I have a lot of these, like these guys have touched 18, 19, 20 year olds have touched $100,000 I'm in an account and their, you know, their education level, their experience level is worth $20 an hour. Like, how can you get them to slow down and say like, it's going to be a long time until you have $100,000, and, you know, but yeah, how much do we glorify money in the home, or how much do we, you know, is that what's talked about, or that's the expectation? You know, and I think that's a lot of it. And then I think, but yeah, like I do think there's a lot of things that can be done proactively, you know, it is so predatory, the marketing. I'll give you, like, I like telling the story because, like, you know, it's, and I think there's some really good people that are really knocking on legislators' doors about this, mm-hmm. which is great mm-hmm. to see. This is the way I put it. So 18 to 22, let's say that's the rough, you know, 18 to 23, rough mm-hmm. college kid, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, let's say FanDuel or DraftKings or one of these companies gives you a free $500 to play, right?
If you is that typical right now?
Yeah, there's a lot of like bonus betting and like promos and like.
So hey, it's not my money, right? It's just it's like a drug addict giving you a free.
Correct.
I mean, not a drug. It's like a drug deal, right? Yep. Where you're getting a free, which I don't think that exists.
No, I never got free plays, free money back.
Yeah,
some free play. Yeah. So this is just kind of what I believe. And because once again, like similar, like obviously, you know, like mm-hmm. the prefrontal cortex isn't fully developed. So the risk taking mm-hmm. behavior is higher, right? So like mm-hmm. part of its development, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And, but that 18 to 23 year old, he gets a free $500, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say he runs it all the way up to $5,000. He cashes that money out, which is like very hard to do, right? Like it's like, you just want to keep going. That's when the addiction takes over, right? And it's like, well, five was great, but I want a 10, I want 20.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say he does do that, right? I would basically say that no college-aged male could then never go back, right? Like, wasn't that fun when I got the money and I like, you know, even if they're able to get out, which would in of itself would be amazing. But like, that's like the hook that these companies are doing. And then it's like, let's say we're college dorm together, it's like if I bring you on the site, mm-hmm. I get an extra $100. Mm-hmm. I get an extra, it's like, oh, mm-hmm. if the heroin dealer gives my other mm-hmm. friend, like these guys mm-hmm. don't operate that way. So it's mm-hmm. what they're kind of getting away with is it's just a general lack of understanding of how because like I said, it's different. Like money is something that's never mm-hmm. going away. Sports mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. going to be a mm-hmm. fabric of this and mm-hmm. you know this country
so insidious, man.
Yeah,
so insidious. And you just you hear how slippery that slope is, and like you're saying, that person, even if they can do that, that's like the Dalai Lama or the Michael Jordan of say that situation. I used to travel around the country and do a lot of parenting workshops, and I used to show a pie chart, of course anonymously, of a former client of mine. This is a true client. He was a valedictorian of his high school, and he used to smoke weed twice a month, every other Friday, pretty much, twice a month. And I used to show his pie chart as parenting presentations, because he had an academic slice, which was huge. He was a valedictorian. He was on the, I think, like debate team, which was big. He was on the rowing team. Mm-hmm. He had a girlfriend. He had a job. Mm-hmm. He had a family slice. And then if you zoomed in, you had to like zoom in.
Yeah.
You could see this, the thinnest little thing that was a cannabis slice. And I used to say, that is like the 0.00000, you know, like 1%. Like that is not what, you know, most teens are doing. So what I hear from a message to parents that you just stated is that while we can't be omnipresent and we can't helicopter and we can't shut down every little thing, that idea of the I'm just experimenting line with gambling is similarly flawed as it is with cannabis or alcohol or obviously benzodiazepines or the list goes on and on, opiates. So, and it sounds very, just like, the psychology of that. These people have hired fantastic psychologists who are, of course, building all these little incentives and gamifying, right, the hook. That's very difficult. So I've learned so much. A couple of things I just want to summarize for parents listening is definitely think of your own kid's pie chart. Make sure that they're heterogeneous as opposed to homogeneous mm-hmm. in terms of their passions, interests, things of that nature. Definitely be mindful if they're clearly struggling on the self-esteem, self-worth side, and all they talk about, right, is this one thing, whether it is this sport or sports in general. Definitely be mindful of how much allure or esteem or just how much we're putting money on a pedestal. And obviously, let's be mindful of any early signs and be mindful of the things we can control. So we can control whether we are right? Giving our kids money and or helping them to slip deeper into negative patterns and avoid some natural consequences early on that could be rather helpful. And of course, when someone is concerned about their loved one, you are an absolutely amazing, amazing resource. I'm so excited to have you as a part of my network. And if anyone has questions or concerns about whether or not their teen or young adult is, you know, slipping, whether that's, like you mentioned earlier, Brian had mentioned pre-contemplative or contemplative. Those are different stages from the stages of change model. If you feel like there's any red flags, please reach out to Brian. And the best way to do that, Brian, is?
My website, brianbillandcounseling.com. Email, call, my number's on there. But even if it's just connecting someone to a meeting or a resource locally, like, happy to do it. And very passionate about it and super, super grateful I got to chat it up with you today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Brian is just a great person. And I love your approach of the coming alongside. And obviously, of course, your ultimate game or goal is to help this person achieve recovery and full-time sobriety from gambling. But I love that you meet them where they're at and you understand exactly, you know, how much to push, how much to pull, you know, what to let go, you know, what to allow kind of to fail forward, so to speak. And you do a great job of understanding, again, the young person's perspective and doing it in such a, you know, non-judgmental way where you hold space, but you also challenge the heck out of them to grow, which is why I love using you. So
yeah,
thank you so much. Thank you so much. I learned so much. And of course, any parent who's listening, who is concerned about their teen or young adult who can be struggling with gambling or eating disorders like we talked about today, or of course, mental health and addiction, or is just displaying any kind of emotionally dysregulated behaviors and really struggling to lead a life that they could be proud of and you could be proud of, please go to fourpeaksparents.com. Reach out to me. You can sign up for a free discovery call. Also, please sign up for the newsletter so you can get free tips, tools, and strategies right to your inbox. And I hope, I guess it's going to come out after the holidays. So anyway, I hope everyone had a happy holiday in the past. So thank you so much, Brian. And thank you to all the listeners. Have a great day, everybody. Bye.
Thanks again.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.